What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Built Different podcast. Our mission: to spark hope, encouragement, and motivation in and through your life today.
When you finish a podcast, our hope is that our community would be inspired to live different, to live freely and boldly because of the love of Jesus.
We'll be your hosts. I'm Zach.
And I'm Brooke. Let's go. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Built Different podcast.
Yes.
We're so eager to have you back. And today, Zach, we have an incredible guest.
That's right.
Her name is Rebecca Lyons.
Come on.
Now, as you all know, Rebecca Lyons is a nationally acclaimed speaker.
Yep.
She's a podcaster and a best-selling author of three different books.
Yeah.
Free Fall to Fly, You Are Free, and her more new book, Rhythms of Renewal, which we really touched on today.
Yeah.
But it was just such a joy to have Rebecca on. And honestly, she just encouraged us to reset the rhythms of our life in order to align with our passion for Christ.
That's right.
And if you are struggling in any way, or just going through hardship or suffering or dealing with things like anxiety, this is a must listen.
Like, for sure.
We'll just speak truth into that and encouragement that is just off the charts. But a quick piece of her story that she didn't really share in the interview, but I just thought is so powerful and speaks to who she is.
Yeah.
Is a part of her testimony that is about her son, Cade. Mm. So when she had her first son, Cade, he was diagnosed with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And she tells the story of just holding him for the first time and locking eyes with him. And when he looked up at her, she said that it was almost like he was saying, "Are you going to love me for me?
Hmm.
Not just for what I can or can't do, but just for me."
Mm.
And I thought that's such a beautiful part of her testimony, because Rebecca has gone on to obviously love her kids so well. She's a mother of four and just poured that life into them, whether or not they provided or did or whatever it is. And that's the same message that Christ speaks to us when we ask him, like, "Christ, are you going to love me for me? Or is it about what I'm doing or what I'm being and getting done and performing?" And it's like, no, Brooke, Zach, I have chosen you for you.
That's
and
right.
Not what you can do, but who I am.
I think it's so powerful, Brooke, because like you're saying is that we're already fully known. You know what I mean? No matter what waters we may go through, the tough times, the difficult experiences. And that's why I think so powerful about this episode in particular is that Rebecca really dives into some of her biggest challenges and struggles revolving mental health and just even different things, like you said, with her firstborn son, Cade, and having to navigate those waters at just 26 years old, right?
Yeah.
Of having to just raise a son who had Down syndrome and just the difficulties that that can even experience and bring. But one thing that really brought to my attention was just that aspect of pain, that pain is inevitable in this life, right?
Yeah.
It said few lies are as attractive or as poisonous as the claim that following God is a means to a worldly success. And I think that's powerful in itself, but it brought me to 2 Corinthians 12 when it was talking about Paul and he had that thorn in his flesh. And I think every listener out there today can, you know, say that they've experienced their own thorns, right? Their own difficulties, their own challenges, things that hurt, that are annoying, sometimes that just don't even make sense, Brooke. But it brings me to verse 9, and it says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me." I think it's so powerful to think that our painful experiences in life can actually bring about our greatest purposes. And sometimes we ask God all the time, like, why me, right? Like, why would you put me to the test? Why would you allow me to have to walk through these murky and dark waters? Like, it's not fair. But at the end of the day, sometimes God, like we've said before, God chooses us to go through those difficult seasons. And he just wants us to put on a lens of perspective to say, my son or my daughter, like, you can actually grow from this, right? Pain ultimately produces growth. And that's what I've been learning the most, as we were just talking earlier, was that I feel like the Lord is more concerned with building our character in the midst of our pain than he is about bettering our circumstances.
Yes.
in the midst of our pain. And so that's something that Rebecca touches on. She actually uses this verb, and she says that the glory is attached to the suffering. Mm-hmm. And she said you can only heal when you actually and fully embrace the pain that God brings in our lives. And I think that in itself really speaks to her, and it's a testament to her and her character as well. So we cannot wait for you guys to hear this amazing interview. Let us introduce you to our friend, Rebecca Lyons. Miss Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I mean, what a privilege and an honor it is for Brooke and I just to spend the next little while with you. I have followed you and your husband, Gabe, and all that you guys are doing for quite some time now. So it truly was an honor just to be able to spend a couple moments with you at the Mental Health Collective, just being able to hear all the amazing things that you're doing and that you guys are doing through ministry. But really, Miss Rebecca, before we dive into your testimony and a little bit more about your best-selling books, I just want to take a minute to kind of just acknowledge the weird season that we've kind of been in since the whole COVID pandemic hit. I mean, we've seen an uptick in so many things like anxiety, depression, relationship tension, even suicidality. But I wanted to recognize that you and your husband, Gabe, you guys have a ministry called Q Ideas, and you guys are really on the front lines doing some very innovative things for the next generation. So what I wanted to ask just here initially, what are you guys seeing? What are you guys hearing from people? And really, what is Q Ideas in your ministry all about?
It's helping Christians engage culture in a way that is hopeful, wholehearted, encouraging, and also honest, you know, not in denial, not head in the sand, but understanding that, you know, that promise of Jesus that in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And so that's okay, right? Like, we know that we live in a fallen world. We are all fallen people, but praise God for redemption and resurrection life. And I think we're all putting our best foot forward every single day that we have new mercies with air in our lungs and a heartbeat and a pulse. And we just want to be faithful to addressing the tensions of our time in a way that is fortified and doesn't cower and doesn't shrink back, but is also full of mercy and truth.
I love it.
That's so good. Miss Rebecca, I got to brag on you for a second to our audience. Miss Rebecca is obviously a national speaker, podcaster. She's the best-selling author of three books, Free Fall to Fly, You Are Free, and Rhythms of Renewal. And you just published a 52-day devotional called A Surrendered Yes. On top of all of that, you are a mama to four kids. And so with all of that going on, all of those things that you get to pursue and manage, I guess the question that we would like to ask you is just, how do you manage all of that? And what is driving that passion and that pursuit?
Well, the root word of passion means to suffer. And so a lot of times we, you know, come out, we march, you know, into college or out of college, like ready to charge hell with a water pistol. Like, we're like, want to change the world. And we have all the dreams. Gabe and I did that. We went to Liberty. We wrote all our dreams
on
the
napkins
at Billy Joe's ice cream parlor back when, like, you know, that was like the big out.
I love that place.
And so, and so I think it's like a lot of like zeal that the Lord put in us, you know, and that fire is so pure because, I mean, at your age, it's just so natural to just see the world with rose colored glasses and be like, I want to come into this and I want to affect change and I want to have a, I want to make a mark. I want to have some level of significance in my generation. And then what happened is 3 years into our marriage, we had our firstborn son. And at the time, Gabe was like working for a national speaker and simulcasts and just a national ministry. And he'd been there for 3 years and would be there a total of about five. But when Gabe came into our life, 6 hours later, we found the doctor said, we see signs of Down syndrome in your baby. And actually, we had to fight for him to stay alive. And I was 26. I was barely, you know, a kid myself. And so the entree to parenting was hard, but it was even harder with, he was 4.5 pounds, failure to thrive, emergency C-section in the NICU. I was fighting for my life because I had to have him so quickly that my, all my vitals plummeted. And it was like the hardest day of my life, right? 24 hours of pure, you know, kind of death and resurrection kind of moment. And that shifted something so dramatically in us. It shifted that, like, it kind of gave us overnight a 10-year maturing. Yeah. And it was a sober-mindedness attached to that. And in that response, like, the things that used to be front and center for us kind of took back burner, and maybe the things like a community of kiddos with different abilities was something we'd kind of never really focused on. I didn't have anyone in my family or, like, close friend group that had grown up with special needs. And so all of a sudden the things we'd overlooked became front and center. And that just reordered our life. It reordered our priorities. We just said, we want, you know, whatever days God has for us to be about looking for and taking care of the overlooked and abandoned. And we want to know what matters most to the heart of God, not what is most impressive to the heart of man.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of took us on this like detour, and yet to God it was never a detour. It says all our days were written and planned before one of them began.
Yes.
And that he called out destiny when he knit us in our mother's womb. And so I know that he put in us what we would need to parent Cade long before we knew.
That's right.
And honestly, Cade's life catalyzed our nonprofit because we just were like, let's just start a nonprofit and just talk about what does faithfulness look like, because we knew that 92% of kids with Down syndrome were terminated before birth. So like there wouldn't, you know, in most families not be a Cade.
Right.
And so that just kind of takes us back to the cultural lens of how does culture view dignity and life differently than God. And so then we just started pressing into the cultural lens of post-Christian and, you know, where the church is and what are the hard conversations that the world is having around technology, humanity, gender, sex, race, all of it. And so we wound up having these conversations that most churches wouldn't have, because it was almost like the church stayed over here and culture was over here and they didn't really talk because the tensions in the world felt like out there, right? But we were kind of more in our like Christian bubble. And we're like, this isn't going to last, because everything always seeps down from culture into the church unless the church really can recognize it for what it is and take a stand. And that's what we've seen happen. And so we just thought, like, if we can be more proactive in whatever those hard conversations are that are happening in culture that might feel like little far reaching for the church, those are going to enter our homes someday. That's just assimilation, the law of assimilation and technology and our kids growing up with access to anything, then all of a sudden the content that we talk about, gender dysphoria, suicidal ideation, legalization of marijuana, like things we talked about a decade ago are now in Christian homes, clearly. And they probably always were. They were, but they just weren't acknowledged or recognized. And I think the more we bring these things into the light and just say, what does God have to say? What does faithfulness look like? How do we hear things that are hard and not leave the room? How do we not let shame just kind of make people feel alone and isolated in their pain?
Yes.
Then healing can begin, right? That's like, we're all broken in desperate need of a savior. My sin just my stronghold might just look different than somebody else's. So that just really, God used Cade, and then we had two more kids, and then we wound up adopting Joy 3 years ago from China, and she also has a Down syndrome diagnosis. So there are bookends, 21, 19, 17, and now 8. She's like in second grade. So I don't know, we're really old. I don't know what we think we're doing, but it just keeps us young and it keeps us caring about what God cares about and keeps us tethered. And it's been really fun.
It's so encouraging and inspirational, really, to hear about all that you guys are doing and then through your nonprofit and your ministry. Yeah. And I think one word that comes to mind as you mention all the things is just obedience to the calling that God has placed on both yours and Gabe's life to have these hard conversations, to dive into the murky waters sometimes and the gray areas, and just to open up some eyes to what truth really looks like and what love looks like. So I'm so appreciative of what you do. And it's funny you talk about, you know, some of the tests that you've already been through, because we've all heard it said, there's no testimony without the test. There's no message without the mess. Miss Rebecca, we can't make it to the mountaintops without truly having to journey through some deep and dark waters sometimes. And you're very open about some of the challenges that you face when it comes to mental health, when it comes to anxiety and panic attacks and even some depression. So just the question that I have for you is, how are you able to really manage and just kind of navigate your way through the journey of some of those challenges? But also, what are some red flags that some of our listeners can be looking for where it's like, okay, maybe I'm transitioning from just being anxious to now maybe kind of borderline having a disorder in some point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I had my first panic attack in 2010 when we had moved to New York City. And we moved to New York City because we had started this national nonprofit that was really convening people on the front lines of arts, media, government, policy, education, social sector. And they were always coming through New York City. And so there were these Christians in the city, and people would come to the city who very much were who we were trying to serve, people who are Jesus in the fashion industry and finance, and but felt very alone. And so we thought that'd be a great idea for us to go there too, with three kids, two toy poodles, and a minivan, which is not cool at all anywhere. Particularly pulling into Midtown Manhattan. And so Kennedy, our youngest at the time, was starting kindergarten, and I'd really been home with them in that first decade after Kate's birth, helping Gabe launch this on the side, but just truly that was mainly my focus with them. And I was trying to kind of reawaken who was Rebecca before kids. I definitely always thought I would work, but I, you know, had ministry work. I had done a lot of different things, and even coming out of Liberty, but it was in that soul searching season that I actually had my first panic attack. And that started on a plane, but then it continued immediately in trains, elevators, subways, and crowds. And it was all rooted in claustrophobia. So because you've been to New York City, you would know it's impossible to avoid those things.
Yes, it's all claustrophobia.
And so it was like, I didn't ever really have a history of that. Definitely didn't have it attached to claustrophobia or feeling of being trapped and powerless. And I think what it did, it kind of awakened maybe some trauma earlier with Kate's birth, and but it in a different way. It was like New York became the pressure cooker that pushed whatever I was able to kind of tolerate to the surface. And so that's how I knew that this was more than just a single incident. It became a disorder, in that I would, you know, jump on the subway, then try to open the doors, claw the doors back open to jump off the minute it would, or if I was on an elevator. We lived on the corner, like Bloomingdale's was around the corner, and the children's department was on the ninth floor, and I would get on the elevator, and then I would, like, it would get too many people, and I would jump back off, and then I would take the stairs. When you're taking the stairs nine flights because you'd rather avoid something, you know, you've reached a different level here, of just how to always, like, monitor the conditions around you. So you're literally in hypervigilant, this like this very vigilant state of the amygdala is just firing all the time with this cortisol stress hormones. And when that is heightened all the time, you're living like a war vet. You're living with some level of hypervigilant survival skills that the brain is creating all these new neural pathways that just basically says life is not safe. You're not safe. And it just keeps reinforcing that. And so that lasted for me for about a year. And I just remember the moment where it kind of broke. And it was when I just cried out to God for rescue in the middle of the night. I'd waken from a dream, had a panic attack in my bed. And that was new, because it was like, at least I had my bedroom was safe, right? But then all of a sudden, like, nowhere was safe. And Gabe started praying for me, and I just remember raising my hand and I just said, rescue me, deliver me. I cannot do this without you. And in that particular moment, my body broke on the bed and all was still. And I was flooded with the peace of God. And I think it was just kind of like the faith of my youth, like just coming to Jesus at age five, even though I didn't really understand it all. I knew that he was true and he was good and I wanted to follow him. And it wasn't though until adult life, like much, much later, like at 36, right, that I actually experienced the rescue of God. And that was just transformative. It was almost like you had a head knowledge, but then you had a heart experience. You had a divine encounter that literally resurrected you from the dead. And from that day forward, I didn't have another panic attack for 7 years. I would talk to different people and started interviewing people. And I just, like, I think it was this kind of weighted by God's glory in my bed. I could not even move for a while. And I I wouldn't have called it healing at the time, because that was not something that was really talked about in a very like acute physical sense growing up in my Baptist church. It was like we would pray about things and we would see God move, but it wasn't like this like instantaneous like deliverance, pull you from a pit like in Psalm 18, right? You know, I just, so I didn't really know what to call it. I just knew God met me in like this despair. And but it did catalyze my faith in crazy ways. And it was wild that it happened in New York City, because I'd lived in Christianville for like 13 years in Atlanta, you know, like Christian minivan and our Christian suburb and our Christian church, and like everyone's culturally Christian. And it took me going to the wilderness or going to kind of a foreign land. And I think God does that a lot in, in scripture, right? You've got these exiles and these strangers and aliens, these that are just in a foreign land, and it's wilderness, it's suffering, it's trial, it's hardship, it's crashing. And God is the only option. There is no survival coping mechanisms outside of that. And I just go back to the scriptures that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Like he truly, he says, when you seek me, you find me, when you seek me with your whole heart. And I wondered how much I'd been really seeking him with my whole heart. Like that, like you are all I have. This, you are my only hope. You are my only refuge. There is nothing else that can compare to the rescue that you can bring or the peace that you give. Nothing else can give in the world. And I think sometimes when we get to this level of comfort, we can kind of skate on our, you know, kind of just the foundation that was laid maybe a decade ago or prior to that, or maybe even the prayers of our parents. You know, we kind of coast. But when we have our own hard, like dark night of the soul season, that's personal to us, that's dependent solely on our tethering to God himself, then I think he wants to reveal himself in a fresh way. And that's what he did for me in that season.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that piece of your story, just because I feel like it magnifies the Lord as the deliverer. And it reminds me of like Psalms 40, when it's like, I waited patiently on the Lord. Like you were waiting on the Lord. You had been going through all of these really difficult panic attacks. And then it says, and he drew me up out of the desolate pit, set my feet upon a rock, and put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise. And so that's so beautiful, the way that you magnify the Lord through such a hard season of your life. So thank you for that. And I know a lot of our listeners and Christians all over the world are struggling with this same exact thing, with dealing with this anxiety or this depression or these panic attacks. And I think something that we would love for you to speak into is they're dealing with these difficult circumstances with anxiety or disorder, and they read passages in the Bible that say, like, be anxious for nothing. And I think sometimes as Christians, we can read that and then do a shame spiral. And I would love for you to speak into how your book speaks into that circumstance and how it reconciles it with the four rhythms.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the rhythms never would have happened outside of the rescue. So like there was a rescue moment, and that was my word for the year. And then the Lord actually, you know, I've always been a chronic oversharer. And so he just gave me a story I couldn't shut up about. And my dad had been like that, and he had struggled with mental like just challenges in his adult life. And I kind of felt like I was at that age where I was starting to experience those as well. And I just think the Lord was like, you're going to be the one that breaks this cycle in a generational line. And I just, again, wasn't looking for it. Nobody wants to be like mental health person or anxiety girl. But again, I didn't even, wasn't looking to be a mother of a child with Down syndrome, and that the Lord saw fit. And I think that's one thing that we avoid, is like we avoid anything hard. And we don't really understand that the glory is actually attached to the suffering. It's the suffering that produces the fruit of faith and endurance and hope. It's the suffering. And, you know, it's just not sexy to talk about suffering, right? We just want all the resurrection. But even Romans 8 says, you're no longer fearful slaves, you're sons and daughters of God. And because you are my heirs, you also get to share in my suffering.
That's right.
And then later in scripture, it talks about how you share in the death because you share in the life. Mm. Like, yes, the resurrection is so much sweeter because death always precedes resurrection. Mm. So you got to be okay and comfortable with pain, because you understand that pain is never the end. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the pruning process of maturing, making you perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Mm. It's just a necessary thing. And the more you get comfortable with that, then all of a sudden that pain becomes purpose a lot faster. That's if you let it. You don't fight against it or push it down or ignore it. You can't heal if you actually resist pain. Mm. You can only heal when you embrace it and say, God, what is it that you want to reveal? What is, how do you want to be on display and your glory to be revealed through this season? Yes. So I would say, because the rescue happened, because there was that deliverance moment, and I'm not saying this happens for everyone. It looks very different. A healing journey, God is a Jehovah Rapha, is about healing in all means necessary, in every way possible. So that's what's awesome, is like, no story is the same. So if you're listening and you didn't have this exact like version, that's awesome, because I've had a lot of different versions in different areas, and my kids have had different versions in different. They've had acute like instant moments, and then they've had like, oh man, this thing keeps coming back around, and now I got to actually create some spiritual disciplines to double down. And that's really what the rhythms were about, was that, okay, God can do the, like, I'm going to pull you out of the pit and set your, you know, I like Psalm 18, it's the same as what you're saying. He says, He set my feet on a wide open space, and with my God, I can attack a barrier and leap a wall. But the truth is like, it requires me to take a proactive step. Yes. Like, I can sit outside the pit and like look back down and be like, I'm so glad I'm not in there anymore. But all of a sudden there's this wide open space in front of us, and he's telling you, now go. Like, go attack a barrier, go leap a wall, go use this freedom that you've been given. Don't use it for yourselves, Paul says. Use it to serve one another in love. That's how freedom grows. So that's even in Galatians. So my next book was You Are Free, because I was like, wow, I'm free. And then the idea is like, be who you already are. Well, how do I be free? How do I live free or run free or stay free? Because obviously Galatians, he's like, why are you running back to slavery? You were free. And that could be the same for me. Why are you back in that pit? Well, it's because you actually didn't exercise the gifts that have been given to you. So the rhythmic life, I remember going to the woods, writing my first book, Free Fall to Fly, and it was that story. It was the story of the crash and burn in New York and his rescue. And then I come back in the city. I'm going on a train, a subway, to Long Island City in Queens to visit a friend. And when you do a subway between boroughs, you go a lot deeper underground. So if claustrophobia has been in your history, that's going to trigger something in your brain when you've been out in the woods and all peace, all zen filled, because you're not like in a tight space. And as we descended, all of a sudden the anxiety began to rise. And it had been months since I had felt that. And I just knew at that moment, I just started just to whisper his name. The Prince of Peace, I would just say Jesus, Jesus, like in a cadence that would just keep me calm for those, like that minute that I got from A to B, and just kind of stayed put, and just like, I'm going to need to learn these resilience techniques on how to still confront the places of fear that my brain is telling me are unsafe, because I know that's not true. So I'm now going to have some truth armored with this. Because if you avoid those things, then it only reinforces that shame response that's like, you can't do these hard things.
Right.
But bravery is moving scared. So you have to step back into. So I did a lot of exposure therapy without really meaning to, because I still lived in the city. I had to get on elevators. I had to get on subways. So I almost had to test what I knew to be true, even though my body wanted to fight back. And what I've learned is that you can think something really destructive, but you can speak something really truthful. And when it's called in scripture, taking your thoughts captive, it's like, because I do that best when I speak something different. You can't say one thing and think something else at the same time. So I would get, even on a plane, because the irony of all this is that my panic attacks began on planes, and then God began to put me on a plane every week to go preach about the rescue of God. I was like, what? I can't avoid this. So I would get on a plane and my body would want to start to kind of freak out, and I would just say Jesus. I would like kind of zone in. I'd have scripture. I had worship. And I would say, Jesus, you are my peace. I come under your covering of peace. I submit. I submit this spiral happening right now to you. And so it was almost like, I come under you. Because sometimes we think we're like, just give me the peace, I need to do this. But it's like, no, he is peace. You know, he says, peace be with you. After the resurrection, everywhere he entered, and he says, peace be with you. Like he would, and then he made us so that we could carry a gospel of peace, because we were actually made to carry peace too, and we carry him inside of us. So I was like, okay, you are my peace. You are the Prince of Peace. So I submit to you and not the lie that's attacking me right now. I'm not going to bow to the, like, this thing is bigger than you, because it's not. And so I would just have to consciously stay in that lane. And so this old place of panic became a sanctuary in the sky. But it did require the discipline of not, like, watching a movie or reading People magazine, you know, or whatever you want to do to, like, numb out on a plane. Like, it required me to be sober-minded and just go, God, I want to take this freedom seriously. I want to receive the benefits of it and not squander it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a gift. It's a gift that you give your children, and I want to steward that gift. And so it took some diligence with that. And then it just played out in not only travel and not only New York, but a way of life. It slowly became a way of life where I need room. If I'm stressed, I don't have enough margin in my schedule, that's when the anxiety gets triggered. Yeah. If I'm not connected to my family, then I start to feel alone or isolated even in my community, then depression can start to spike. Like, our brain's just responding to our environment.
That's right.
And it's trying to tell us something. So anxiety can be your friend if you listen to it. It can go, all is not well, and you can keep trying to treat the symptom, but you're not gonna get to the root if you don't change the way you're ordering your life. And so those four rhythms, rest, restore, connect, create, were really about, rest was about my inner life. Am I slowing daily? Am I getting quiet? Am I getting offline? Do I take Sabbath seriously? Do I examine and confess? Do I have a morning routine, routines for deep sleep? Like, just reordering the life. And then the second rhythm was restore. Am I eating food for fuel?
Yeah.
Or is it just coffee and, you know, like caffeine and sugar, you know, because that messes with your emotions as well. And so I was like paying attention to that. I'm like, am I getting enough movement for serotonin to release naturally in my brain? Am I elevating my heart rate daily through nature walks or like just whatever fitness, but play, you know? So I just had to get, it's like you're going back to kindergarten, right? And you're going like, what are the tools you need in your tool belt or your backpack to help you have a great day? And you need to actually eat a good healthy breakfast. You need to probably have a like a calming morning as you get going. You want to feel connected to your friends at school. You want to, how are you? Your hair looks cute. I like your outfit. Like, you want to feel like you're seen and known. And then finally, the last two rhythms are connect. Oh, you want to have fun at recess on the playground? Like, you want to get your wiggles out?
And
just, you know, like, these are just foundational things. They're primal for our bodies. And as adults, we sit 9 hours a day, like, on average. So we're like, well, no wonder we're so, like, bummed out, you know? Like, it's like, get up from your desk, go walk around the walk, have a walking meeting. I do lots of, like, chapters on, like, how to incorporate movement into your life as an adult, because I don't know why the rules are different once you become an adult. And then the last two rhythms are connect and create, and connect is your relationships and create is your vocation. And so kids at school in kindergarten, they get a lot of time for arts and crafts. They get dance and movement. They get, you know, they get hopefully a healthy lunch, and then sometimes they get to cook. And you know, I just, I'm like, if we just all kind of paid attention to those things as kids that made us feel alive and free. And before we were learned that even how to be afraid, I think we can recover a life of vitality that God's intended. He said, be like children, you know,
that's right.
Be like children. And we don't have to complicate the mental health conversation, because mental health is not a theory, it's a practice.
That's right.
And it just means you got to put the things in your life that are so primal and fundamental that help you recover that life.
Man, Miss Rebecca, that fires me up just hearing you share about all of that just amazing wisdom and insight, and just from your challenges and experiences through life, but what God has brought through recovery. I want to reiterate those 4 points one more time, those rhythms: rest, restore, connect, create. So amazing. I've actually shared your book with so many people, and it actually has helped me in my own personal life, so I can't thank you enough for that, just individually. But I love what you said about pain. Glory is attached to suffering. You can only heal when you embrace embrace the pain in your life. Miss Rebecca, how I want to end is just giving you the opportunity to share what God has placed on your life today for the listener out there who's maybe going through something really difficult. Maybe they feel lonely. Maybe they feel anxious. Maybe they feel afraid. They aren't really sure what to do. Maybe they feel like they don't really know where their worth or their identity truly lies. What would you share today, Miss Rebecca, about the love of God that could hopefully then spark some hope, encouragement, and motivation as you leave us today?
Yeah, I would just say that when God knit you, no matter how hard your day is right now, that when he knit you, he crafted you with intention, and he said his works were wonderful. And that means that when he sees you, he delights in you, and he put everything you need actually for a life of thriving is already in you.
Wow.
It's there. And so what I think it's less about you having the capacity or the capability to live a flourishing life. It's more about you taking the agency to actually believe it. Right? Believe that God loves you in such a way that when he said, I did this for you, do you want it? Do you want it? That's why Jesus asked the man, do you want to be healed?
That's
it
right.
Feels like rhetorical. Like, why would he ask that question? Yeah. Of course he wants to be healed. But what that would require the man who sat on that mat for 38 years was that he would have to get up and he would have to roll up that mat. And he would no longer be a victim to that circumstance or that environment, because he was like, well, you know, nobody, the water, people jump in before me and I can't get to it. There was always a reason why he couldn't be well, and it was contingent on somebody else. But that's not what Jesus is asking us. He's saying, no, this is about you and me. Do you believe that when I knit you, I did it with intention, and that I did it out of love? And do you believe that with that I called destiny out over your life, and that I give you agency to step out? And so I think we get stuck because we are waiting for somebody else to do it for us. We're almost waiting for somebody else to believe on our behalf. And I think Jesus is just saying, do you want to be well? Do you believe? Do you have the faith to ask me to do this? And so with asking him, I would just encourage you to say, God, I do believe. I do want this. I do believe I even have the agency. Help me have the courage. Help me have the strength to step out. And I would not do this in your home, like sitting on a couch. I would get up and I would go outside and I would walk around the block, walk around your neighborhood, go to a local park, have a conversation with God. But do it in the movement, because there's something that happens in your brain by like moving and confessing. It seals something that's a proactive step. You're actually acting your way into what you want to see. You're setting a precedent by doing and going. That's why the metaphor for discipleship is follow
That's
me.
Right.
It's not sit there and talk about me or think about me or write notes in church about me. It means get up and use your actual legs and follow me. And when you do that, your brain is going to seal this intention. It's not just going to be a theory. It's an actual practice, because one of the rhythms is walking. And I just think sometimes we're too sedentary, and then that actually takes root in our brains and our brains become sedentary. When I started to put play back into my life and action, and like every day I have to have movement in my life, I found that my brain followed. I found that I felt more faith and hope and serotonin. That happy hormone was released, and it says, this is positivity. This is well-being. We can do this. If you have a hard workout, you're like, come back. You're like, whoa, yes, we can do this. So I would just encourage you, have this conversation with God on the move. And then ask him to show up and open doors that you didn't even see coming. And he will do that.
Wow. Dang, Miss Rebecca, thank you so much for just all the wisdom that you've shared with us on this podcast. It's been really refreshing for me. And just like, I feel like you've pressed us into the heart, back into the heart of God, like to submit to him, not to submit to the lies, but to submit to the Prince of Peace. So thank you so much for joining us today and just for gifting us with everything that you said.
Oh, it's my joy. I love y'all, and I love your generation, my kids. I just love to see like the vitality that is bubbling up, the boldness, the courage. I'm a fan. I'm all in. Anytime you need anything, let me know.
Well, we appreciate you, and we'll be praying for both you and Gabe and your four beautiful children as well.
All right. Take care.
You as well.
Wow, Zach, that was so good.
That was so powerful.
Dang. I just loved what Rebecca had to share and just all of the encouragement amidst times of suffering to take heart, because the Lord is working these evils for good, these tough situations for his purposes. While we were just kind of talking over the interview, getting ready to just make this outro,
the Lord really laid a passage on my heart.
Yeah.
And I really just want to share it with you guys right now and just read it over to you. I think specifically for anyone out there right now who's just feeling overwhelmed,
mm-hmm.
who's feeling like they're drowning, like they don't know what's going on, the world is spinning, and they can't find peace or relief or refuge. I think that this verse is specifically from God to you.
Yeah.
So please just listen to this verse real quick with open ears, just in light of all the wisdom that Rebecca shared with us. So it comes from 2 Corinthians 4, starting in verse 7, and then we'll jump down to verse 16. Now we have this treasure in clay jars, so that this extraordinary power may be from God and not from us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We are persecuted, but not abandoned. We are struck down, but not destroyed. Indeed, everything is for your benefit, so that as grace extends through more and more people, it may cause thanksgiving to increase to the glory of God. Therefore, we do not give up. Even though our outer person is being destroyed, our inner person is being renewed day by day. For our momentary light affliction is producing for us an absolutely incomparable eternal weight of glory. So we don't focus on what's seen, but what's unseen. For what is temporary is what's seen, but what is unseen is eternal. So thank you guys so much for joining us. We just want to encourage you today just to fix your eyes on Christ.
That's right.
And know that He loves you, that it's okay that you're going through such a difficult time or season or trial, and that He is with you and He's in it with you, preparing this eternal weight of glory. We love you guys. And as always, thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time
on the Built Different podcast.